Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans, to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. Each week, I'll be interviewing inspiring and relatable guests in attempts to get to know their hearts, celebrate their stories, and explore the concept of hope to hear how and if it has played a role in their lives. Ultimately, answering the question, does hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not? This week, I'm sitting down with someone who has greatly impacted my life, a leader I look up to, Louis Giglio. Louis is the pastor of Passion City Church and creator of the Passion Movement, which exists to call a generation to leverage their lives for the fame of Jesus. Louis is a national best-selling author of multiple books, including his brand new book, Don't Give the Enemy a Seat at Your Table, which I have read and I love. It released earlier this year, and you, yes, you, can purchase wherever books are sold. Louis is someone I respect and look up to, not just for his leadership, but his friendships. He has many friends that I've connected with over the years, and he is a good friend to them, and he allows them to be a good friend to him, which I think is so important. In this episode, though, Louis and I talk about how to take back control of our minds and emotions when we encounter fear, worry, insecurity, and anxiety. We also touch on the importance of becoming a community maker, how God works and through us when we don't have it all together, Louis's view on how the church can better approach mental illness, which is a topic that I'm passionate about speaking about. In fact, I have a mental illness awareness t-shirt on right now, kind of ironically. And we talk about his brand new book, as I just mentioned, Don't Give the Enemy a Seat at Your Table. Now, as you know, each week in these episodes, we like to ask you, the listener, a question. I invite you to respond on Instagram at Hope Still Wins in the comments or direct message us. We want this to be a conversation that is flowing and ongoing. This isn't just about me talking to Louis. This is about all of us coming together for a common purpose and hopefully a common good. So after you listen to this week's episode, we ask you to ask yourself this question. What is a practice you use to recenter your mind when you feel fear, worry, insecurity, or anxiety creeping in? We are, and I say we, the whole team over at Hope Still Wins, are eager to hear from your responses. We believe this is a great opportunity for us to grow together in a topic that seems to affect so many in today's world. And speaking of responses, we're really excited when many of you wrote in to answer the question proposed in episode 2 with Christine Kane. And today, I'm going to share a few of your answers. As a reminder, the question was, how does choosing the pain of obedience look for you in this season, and what is keeping you anchored to that decision? Caleb B. said, using my voice when God says to use it. My anchor, she says, staying connected to the vision, my why, and my calling. Absolutely incredible, Kayla. I read this earlier today and asking myself the question of what is my why and what is my what? What am I pursuing? What am I trying to do with the resources I have, with the time that I have, and the life that I have? It's a question we can all ask ourselves and I think benefit from. Alicia Kay said, letting go of my own expectations of what life should look like right now and embracing what God has for me in this season. I really believe right now, Alicia, and to all of us, expectations are the things that often push me down. They make me feel like the outsider. They make me feel envious and jealous. I have expectations for me, and then I look on Instagram, or I look on Twitter, or I look on TikTok sometimes, and I see the lives of so many people, and I say, wow, if I could only be doing that. And I say that because I have expectations that for myself that are unattainable. And as a result, when I set these expectations in my life and they're not healthy for me, I oftentimes feel down, which isn't a healthy feeling and not something I want to be experiencing. Well, finally, and I know many of you wrote in as well, but these are the ones we're highlighting for this week. Monica B. said, my friend Kaylee and I were just having a conversation about feeling burnout and discouraged as we round out the first year of the church plant we are attending. The question she asks is, how do we remain faithful when there are no immediate results? When people aren't just busting through the doors every Sunday? She says the answer is obedience. The labor and pain of obedience that God has called us both to. It's the community in which our church is planted that keeps us anchored to our goals and our community with one another in the church. Well, whatever you're pursuing out there, I would just reiterate this. Oftentimes, I mean, when I started Generous, or even, hey, let's talk about Hope Still Wins. We just started Hope Still Wins. We have these massive dreams and these massive goals, and we think this is going to be something that not only enhances our lives, but enhances so many listeners. And at times it gets frustrating, maybe when the listener count isn't what we want, or maybe we're struggling behind the scenes to stay organized and on top of stuff. It oftentimes, when I'm at my unhealthiest, I ask myself, especially when Generous is getting formed, why are we doing this? Like, why not just stop and do something different? And well, the answer that I continue to fall back on is if one person is affected positively from the impact of my life, then this whole life has been worth it. And I think, Monica, when you say this, I say the same thing. That's how much we value the lives of so many people walking and breathing on earth today, is if one person is better because of the work that you do or the work that any of us does, we have to believe it's worth it, and we have to allow that to keep us moving forward. Well, thank you all so much for writing in. Again, a lot of people wrote in. These are the ones that we are reading this week, but continue to write in, and hopefully over the next few weeks or months, we'll be able to read one of your thoughts and talk about it. It's really fun for us, so thank you so much for sharing with the Hope Still Wins family and community. Well, hey, I know you're waiting. I know you're excited, so it's time. The moment you've been waiting for, and I've, been waiting for. Let's jump into my conversation with Louis Giglio.
Louis, thank you so much for coming today. This is a big deal for all of us here at Hope Still Wins.
Hey, listen, I'm so glad to be a part of it, Ben. Thanks for having me.
As I was just telling you before we came on, you've had a part in my life for a long time. In fact, my parents' best friends attend your church. Sadie is a friend of Jessica and I's. Like, your world, like, that you've kind of like impacted is kind of circling my life for a long time. So it's fun to finally get to talk to you.
It's awesome to get to meet you as well. And I've seen some of your Instagram lives and been encouraged by what you've been doing, the stuff that you've been talking about and the way you've been sharing your story. So I'm kind of feeling the same way today. It's great to finally get a chance to be face to face and voice to voice. And I love how God weaves stories like that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, Hope Still Wins is always a place. I'm hoping it's a safe place. We can come to kind of come take a deep breath. And as I was prepping for today, there's a word that I really wanted to talk to you about, because you have a book that just came out, Don't Give the Enemy a Seat at Your Table. And I've listened to over the last 2 days a lot of the morning podcast that you do, about 7 or 8 minutes that kind of speak right now to this book. One thing kept coming to my mind, and we'll get into the book and the topic in a bit, but the word disorientation came to mind as I heard these things. A lot of it was kind of filtering through the chaos and the confusion and how quickly things are changing, and how quickly we can lose ourselves in the changing of if it's the culture, if it's a changing of society. And so when I say the word disorientation to you, what comes to mind?
Well, I think the opposite of that comes to mind right away, and that is anchor. You know, we are supposed to be rooted. That's one of the concepts of faith that you see all throughout our story, that we're rooted and grounded. And I think that when you're not rooted, you're free-floating. You're a leaf in the wind. You're a stick in a river. And whichever way the conversation is moving, you're moving with it. And right now, the conversation moves so many different directions every day. And you think, oh, okay, we're finally getting a little bit of a rhythm. And then there's a disruption that happens. And once that disruption happens, people don't know for a minute which way's up or down. and they don't know which way's home. And that's what comes to mind when you say disorientation or disoriented. I think it's people who have lost a sense of where did I come from and how do I get back home? And right now there's a lot of people flying in the wind and they're not sure about either of those two things. And those are the two most important things about every person listening to us today is where did I come from and how do I reconnect with home? And I think if you figure that out, you had a great start on life. And if you don't know the answer to those two questions, you're disoriented your whole life.
I spent a lot of time over the last 2 years as I was writing my book, talking to people from different generations. One of the hopes that I had was to try to bring in as many voices from as many places as possible. And one of the common themes, especially as I kind of ended writing the book, was that every generation right now is feeling this sense of what they've known being ripped away. Good, some bad, right? There's not always a bad part of some of your biases being ripped away. But in a sense, they feel like they're drowning. And this is people that are in middle school. This is people that, you know, are retirement, people that are, you know, in senior, you know, living facilities going, I just don't know where to turn anymore. If that is somebody out there listening, what would your advice be to them?
Well, I think when you're drowning, what you need is an external element. So drowning people never save themselves. So I think that maybe the gift in the helplessness that a lot of people are feeling right now is the opportunity to cry out and say, help, I'm drowning. And hopefully there's going to be a voice on the other side of that equation that has something to offer to you. The problem right now is everybody's drowning. And so when I look at you, you know, the worst thing that can happen when somebody is drowning is for you not to have that flotation device, because they're going to cling to you, grab onto you. Every lifeguard is taught this, and they're going to end up pulling you under. So that's why when the lifeguard swims out, he's got that buoy with him, so that when the person grabs him and wants to take him under or her under, there's a flotation device already in the equation. And I think what we need right now are more people like you that are saying there are flotation devices. It's called hope. And for me, hope has a name, and it's offering to people something that's durable and something that will not sink. And right now, that's the opportunity we all have, is to rise above. So I say to people, look, if you're that middle school kid right now, call out for help. And I know God has got someone nearby who can offer something greater than themselves to you. If you're in that senior facility right now, call out for help. And if you're able to give help, take the initiative and do that. And every church right now should be targeting senior living facilities and saying, can we write letters? Can we come do a drive-by? How can we offer hope in the midst of this moment?
You mentioned you feel like everybody's drowning right now. Do you mind touching on that a little bit more? Because I think that is true. It's also oddly, and tell me if I'm crazy here, Louis, it's oddly comforting because it makes me feel less crazy and less alone. You know, it makes me feel personally like if somebody else is out there saying, I don't know where to turn. And, you know, yes, and it, for me personally, my hope is in Jesus. And at times that hope feels like I'm just holding on to it as hard as I can and try not to let it go. But it's hard because I feel like I'm drowning. So if we're all in that, what do you mean by it?
Well, I think that right now the great equalizer is that no matter which side of any of these conversations you're on, we all have been through a year that has done unbelievable damage to our psyche. And so the instability of every single day, and now it's this oil pipeline has been tapped into. I don't know if that'll still be news by the time this is heard, but you know, we got people circling gas stations wondering if we're going to run out of gasoline today. I'm like, that's the last thing we need after all the other uncertainty. Now the uncertainty of, am I have enough gas in my car to go to my job or to get where I need to go? And every day is new uncertainty. And I think that has put a lot of us in this position of feeling like, I don't know if I can tread water much longer. But what you said, Ben, I'm just holding on as tight as I can. I think there's a power, and I'm not perfect at this, so I'm not offering the Louis platitudes here, but there's a power in understanding that if I did let go, let's just say I said, God, I can't hold on one more day, and I let go, I wonder if I would discover that he actually is holding on to me. And I think sometimes the pressure comes when people say, I'm at the end of my rope. That is a pressure-packed place to be. When you know, I don't have one more inch to go. And I say to people, well, if God is real, call out to him and then let go of the rope. And I think when we do that, I'm not talking about being irresponsible and not showing up for our commitments and saying, I'm checking out. I'm just talking about that personal pressure of saying, I have to hold it all together, of just letting go and saying, God, I'm going to find out right now if I'm going to sink or not. Are you big enough to hold me? Are you strong enough to hold me today? Because I'm not strong enough to hold on to you. Are you strong enough to hold on to me? And I have found in my life, Ben, when I say I quit, and I, you know, I have to qualify all this. I'm not talking about literally walking in and quitting my job or quitting my marriage or quitting on commitments. But when I say to God, I quit, I can't do it, that's when I have felt his grace become more real to me than any other time in my life. And Jesus didn't die just so I could go to heaven. Jesus died so that I could make it through Thursday. And that's the gospel.
Thanks for sharing that, because there's a moment in my life where I believe that my commitment, where I finally laid down at the foot of the cross, was I struggled with addiction for years. And there was one day I walked into my bathroom, I looked at myself in the mirror, I said, you're not the man you ever dreamed of being. And you're not on a path towards the man you ever dreamed of being. And so I got down on my hands and knees and I just cried out to God, God, if you're real and you're there, I need you now because I can't do this alone. And God showed up. And I forget that moment often, especially when, you know, when like life has a checklist and I wake up every day and I do what's on my calendar. And then I go to bed at night and I try to recover and rest for the next day. I forget those moments of letting go. Is there any other, like for somebody out there listening, some tangible examples of what it looks like to let go in that responsible, safe way that you're talking about?
Well, I applaud you, A, for talking about your story. I've got a similar story of being in a hole of depression and anxiety a decade ago that I have no idea to this day how I fell into, but I never thought I would be out of it, and I certainly could never imagine sitting here talking to you today. And I had a lot of those moments in the several months of being out of commission. But there was that pinnacle moment, and we've all had some of those pinnacle moments, or most of us have, where we've just said, God, I got no more answers. I've been to every doctor. I've failed at everything I've tried. I'm just crying out to you. And he does intervene. But the human nature is a forgetful nature. Human nature is amnesia. And we forget. And that's why God says through his word so many times, remember. That word is a constant theme through his word. Remember, remember, remember when I brought you out. Remember when I brought you through. Remember the pillar of cloud by day. Remember the fire at night. Remember when the sea parted. Remember when the manna came down. Remember? And you would think, how could we forget? Well, sin has a way of causing us to have amnesia. And I just think that a simple, helpful, healthy way to answer your question is to put yourself in that space of spirit, knowing that Jesus is at the table with you. And that's what the book's all about. The Lord said, as a shepherd, he prepares a table before me in the middle of the storm, in the presence of my enemies. And it's just seeing that. And I know for me, going through ups and downs in my life with fear and anxiety and control and laying awake at night trying to solve problems and trying to be God in areas where I have no business, I don't have any ability. I know just saying to him, Jesus, you're my shepherd, so I'm going to give you X, and I'll name it. I'll name the person, the situation, the conversation, whatever it is, and say, I need to put this in your hands and transfer it to you. tomorrow when I wake up, if you want me to do something about it, I'll be here. I'll be available. I'll be as obedient as I can. But I can't carry this all night. I can't carry this, period. So if you're my shepherd, I'm going to hand it to you. I need to sleep now. You're going to be up all night anyway. I know I can trust you with it. And that sounds like a simple thing, but it that transference is, that's where we go. And that's where I know I go to find that peace and to find the weight a little bit easier.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds simple, except even as you're saying it, there's this level of anxiety that kind of wells up in me, because it's like, what that means is I'm going to give up control. I'm going to have faith and trust that there is a God that has it under control, that can guide me through it. The words even like, hey, I'm going to trust God for this. It sounds great. And I can speak on that. We can both sit here and talk about how good that sounds. But the act of that, the ability to give up something so close to you, so important to you, something that's exhausting you, just for a moment of rest, just for a moment of faith, is extremely difficult and something that I personally don't do often.
I think that for me, and I talked about this in one of my earlier books, that the thing that probably pushed me into that hole of depression at the end was two things. One was a desire for approval, and the other was control. And in the season where I went in that hole, we were planning a local church. And any pastor listening to this will get a kick out of it. But if you're struggling with an unhealthy need for approval of people and control, the worst thing you can do is plan a local church, because you are not going to get approval from everybody eventually. And you're going to understand that you're not in control. That's why it doesn't say Louis is the head of the church. It says Jesus is the head of the church. And I think that the reality has been, I don't want to admit it and you don't want to admit it, but it is true. We're not in control of hardly anything. We're in control of the choices that we make and the way we respond to other people and circumstances that come into our life. And that's about it. I'm not running the global economy. I'm not running the pandemic. I'm not running the story about masks or no masks. I'm not running the election. I'm not running the vote count. I'm not running, if you're a parent, you're not running your kids' lives. I know you want to be and you're trying to be, but you can't control their decisions. You cannot control what happens to them in a given day. So it is hard. It's scary and hard. But the alternative, you talk about anxiety, the alternative is crippling anxiety and sleepless nights. And so I think it's better to fight through the anxiety of, I'm just going to release this. I'm going to do my part, but I'm going to continually say to God, if you're God, I must trust you to be God. And if I can't do that, then what are we talking about? So I think that's the simple step. And Jesus was willing to do that at the end of his life. And it was a gut-wrenching decision. But even he showed us he was willing to submit and to relinquish control right there at the end when it mattered most, because he knew the character and the heart of God. And I have the cross, you have the cross. So I know God is good. I know he's trustworthy no matter what the circumstance. And that helps me offload what I'm concerned about to him, because I know I can trust his heart.
This week's episode of Hope Still Wins is brought to you by Generous International. Generous International is a company that I co-founded. Generous donates 100% of profits to nonprofits fighting human-facing injustice. So every bag of coffee bought, every cup of coffee drink is going back to make the world a better place. Generous is best known for selling coffee, specialty grade coffee. So it's some of the best coffee in the world. You're going to drink coffee anyways. And like we like to say, why not make it life-changing coffee? Well, you can visit Generous at generouscoffee.com. Please go out today and check out Generous Coffee.
a lot of the themes that we're talking about so far are written about or at least touched on in your new book, Don't Give the Enemy a Seat at Your Table. To dive into that a little bit, going off of what we're just talking about, you mentioned it a few minutes ago, but you said that Jesus welcomes us to have a seat at the table. A great phrase that you just said, but highly impactful when you think about it. The God of the universe allows us to have a seat at the table to be community changers. And I'm going to go on for just one second here. I'm going to throw it back over to you. But the idea in a recent podcast that Passion City just released, one of those morning podcasts, it talks about being a community changer. I think it was maybe a week ago. So it'd be early May, depending on when this gets released. But it talks about being a community changer. And so this morning, it really touched me as I was praying for this, was that we have a seat at the table with the God of the universe. Like, we're accepted, we're loved, we're welcomed. He enjoys communing with us. But at the same time, we have then the opportunity, I guess I would say, to go out and make a difference in the world around us. Can you touch on both those subjects in relation to your new book that just came out?
Well, man, I think that message is our story right now. And if there ever was a time that the world needs a city on a hill, it's today. And I love that that's how Jesus described us. He said, you know, you're a light on a hillside, a city on a hill. And the story can't be hidden. It's got to be put on a lampstand so it can bring light to the whole house. And what that means for us is starting right here in our neighborhood, to see the neighborhood and to see the neighborhood the way he sees the neighborhood. And the gospel story, when it started, he said, you're going to be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. So I think we always have big plans and big dreams, but you and I know that every big dream and big vision always starts in a localized environment. So every company that's running the world right now started in a garage, and it started with a passion to see one thing change that could impact someone's life. And I think the gospel works the same way. And so I think knowing that you have Jesus at the table, what's the very next phrase he says? I prepare a table before you in the presence of your enemies. And then he says, or the psalmist is saying, my cup overflows. So what does that mean? It means as long as I have the source of life, then I can be generous with life. As long as Jesus is at the table, I don't have to hoard what's on the table. I can even share with my enemies because he gave them a front row seat to this table that we're at. And I can give what I have to you, knowing that Jesus is going to always be enough for me. And I think the scarcity mentality is an anti-gospel mentality, because there's nothing scarce about God giving his best and his only son for you and me. And so we've got to lose this sense, if I give away what I have, I'll lose. It's like, no, if you give away what you have, you'll still have a shepherd at your table and you'll have everything you need. And as you give away what you have, I mean, what does the scripture say? He who refreshes others will be refreshed. And so it just starts local. It starts with seeing people. It starts with touching the people who are closest to us with hope, with care, and to the degree that we can, with change that will bring this gospel light into their world.
And there's a consistency with that, right? I mean, there has to be. You know, you just can't show up one day, disappear, and then try to come back. There's a consistency, but that consistency takes that refreshing that you talked about, and also the faith that there is a God that is overflowing your cup so that you can share. And one of the topics in the book that I was very interested in, and I think it's around page 17, somebody's reading it, go back to it. It talks about having a faith that inflates during difficult times. And so if you're the scenario that plays out in my head is if I'm somebody out there listening and I feel like I'm giving my all, that I'm the one out there just trying as hard as I can to be the best friend, the best child, the best parent, whatever, the best coworker, the best grandparent, and difficult times strike. And I feel like I am just getting beat down. And I'm questioning if this whole generosity thing was ever worth it. How do you develop a faith that inflates during those times and doesn't disappear?
Well, I mean, I think, again, we had this shepherd at the table. So are my eyes on him or are my eyes on the circumstance? And we all are in the middle of difficulty. Our family's journeying through cancer right now, and many, many years of cancer treatment. We're right in the thick of it still today. And every person listening to us has got a difficult situation. And so I have the choice. I'm not going to ignore that. I mean, that's real. So I'm not going to just throw some spiritual platitude at that and say, oh, well, you know, the Lord's bigger than my problems. No, the problems are real and we have to take them seriously, but it's choosing where we focus. And I think so often we sell out, even like with cancer or with addiction you mentioned earlier, or with the loss of a job or with this pandemic, we flat out worshiped this pandemic for an entire year. We put it on a pedestal. It's all we talked about. It was in every conversation. It dominated and framed every scenario. Instead of saying, it's real, we got to solve it. We have to face it. We're all going to try our best by the grace of God to live through it. But this pandemic is not bigger than God. It is not greater than Jesus. In fact, he can use this pandemic to do amazing things in this moment. And he has done that. And I think whenever we lose sight of the shepherd, then we're going to typically gravitate toward the circumstance. And when we do that, we're going to reflect and worship whatever our eyes are set on. So for me, it's just coming back to asking the question, where are my eyes right now? Are they on the face of the shepherd? Because if they are, guess what? You're going to see that reflected on my face. Even in a difficult situation, he's there. And as long as he's there, I can still continue to be generous and have that faith that is anchored in an immovable truth. And my faith in God, it is not ratified on a daily basis based on the circumstances that I face. If it was, it's a roller coaster and I don't need it and I wouldn't preach it to anybody. My faith is rooted, it's anchored in a real day in history when Jesus gave his life for me. And because of that moment and that day and a lot of days like it in my life, I know I can find a taproot in a desert. I can find a stream in barren places. I can have a rock to stand on in a tornado because he's real.
For somebody out there listening, and again, we talked about your book in the opening, and we talked about your book a little bit here. You do have many books that people can benefit from. But the most recent is Don't Give the Enemy a Seat at Your Table. It's time to win the battle of your mind. Who's this book written for?
It was written for me. I can't take credit even for the title, Ben, because I was in one of those seasons where some things were said and done. This was years back, and I didn't feel like I got a fair shake. And we've all been there. And eventually, you know, you kind of ride it out, and a few months had gone by, and something happened that vindicated me. And when that moment happens, you want somebody to share that kind of news with, right? And so I texted a friend who had walked through this with me, and I said, you're not going to believe what happened today. I knew that if you gave it time, all this was going to come out and see. We were right all along, and it was a long text, and you know, I'm a little bit older than you, and so it takes me a minute to compose a very long text. And I hit send, and I stared at my phone like, I'm not going anywhere till I get a response. And it better be, you know, proportionate to what I just sent. No emojis coming back. And a few minutes went by, and I got a phrase on my phone. And I was like, surely the next thing is going to say, I'm sorry, I hit send too soon. Here's the rest of my answer to your text. And then I realized I'm not getting any more text. And so I focused on the words. It was 9 words. And this friend loved me enough to kind of cut through the clutter. And the text read, don't give the enemy a seat at your table. Talking about the capital E enemy, not people, but the adversary. And Ben, it arrested me. I realized, A, how petty I sounded and how pitiful I sounded when I have a Father in heaven who's promised that he'll sit at a table with me in the presence of any situation. And that 9-word text just cut into the clutter, and it startled me because I realized for the last few months I've been entertaining a conversation with my adversary. He's the one who's making me have all these conversations with people in my head. Do you do that where you're working out everything and you end up being right every single time and you're laying awake at night trying to solve things and manage things? And I went, oh my word, I have let the enemy pull up a chair and start a dialogue, and he's eating my lunch. And so I wrote the book because that message changed my life. It still impacts me consistently, even to this day. There'll be a day and every week that a thought comes in my mind that I start to camp out in a place of negativity or a place of doubt or a place of fear. And I remember again, hey, I'm letting the enemy have a seat at my table right now. So I wrote the book for me. And I think there are a lot of people out there like me who have got these thoughts that have just migrated up to their table. They sort of pulled a chair up, you know, like the enemy can just subtly do, starts a gentle conversation. So, Ben, how's it going today? How are you feeling? How are things in your relationship? Kind of tough right now. That's the way he starts. But what his plan is to build a highway of negativity that becomes a neural pathway in our mind that becomes a process out of which we live, which becomes an action that becomes our life. And so I wrote it for me, but I think anybody struggling with whether they matter, whether God loves them, if they're going to make it or not, if everybody's against them, if it's something better going on at a different table than the table God set for them, this book is for them.
Yeah, and I mean, what better time? I mean, so many books are going to be well-timed right now coming off of last year, but how much we've been able to sit or have the opportunity to sit in unhealthy silence, not in good silence, not in quiet, but in unhealthy silence where our minds raced, where we felt disconnected, where we felt alone and isolated, where the world is just orienting our thoughts and our minds, and we don't have anywhere to turn. Well, Louis, two last questions before we go. One is something I've always admired about you, and you just did it again as you talked about your book. You've never been afraid to speak about your own struggles, your own times of being misinterpreted or feeling abandoned. You've never struggled with that, which I think for anybody out there listening makes them say, if they've read your book or they've heard you talk or they've met you in person, they go, that guy just has it together. And he is just rocking and rolling and he gets it all right. And here I am sitting on the sidelines going, if I only had what Louis had. Louis, are you perfect?
You know, I think that the message of life, and it's a tightrope, and is all of us are struggling. And I want to make sure that as believers, especially, that we're not offering to the world band-aids and platitudes for people that are really struggling. And in a particular thing, I talked about depression earlier, the church has got to destigmatize mental illness because it's real. And we've got to quit saying to people, hey, just have more faith or just pray more about it. But at the same time, we don't want to say, oh, you know, everybody's anxious right now. It's just part of life. It's just the way it's going to be for now. So anxiety is just a part of the equation. It's finding that middle ground. And I think every leader, and I know for sure myself, I want to continue to tell people, look, I'm struggling every day. I wrote this book about winning the battle of your mind. And somewhere along 3 or 4 days ago, I had the thought come in my mind, nobody's going to read this book and it's not going to help anybody. It's like, wait a minute, I'm releasing a book and I've now got this thought in my mind that nobody cares about this book and it's not going to help anybody. So no, I'm not perfect. And thank God Jesus is. And I have access to him. Every day for me is the same as it is for everybody else. I have a choice whether I'm going to trust him. I have a choice whether I'm going to take the wheel or I'm going to let him take the wheel. And that's every day of my life. And I think that, and I hope that the people that work alongside me and the people that hear me teach or preach, I hope they can sense and feel like this guy doesn't have it all together. And that's actually why I'm listening to him, because he's talking about how God works through us when we don't have it all together.
You know, a bunch of people out there listening are probably going, and I'm hoping they hear this, is that you can be a community maker, a community changer, and not have it all together. And I think that's one of the coolest things here, is that you can step out there and love and give hope and kindness to those around you and generosity to those around you without having it all together. What a cool responsibility we have to have. Louis, last question for you. Ask everybody this. It is kind of the title of the show. We've touched on a little bit. Louis, do you believe hope still wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
I absolutely believe hope wins. I know hope wins. And so I think that's one of the things I can say unequivocally. And the reason I can say that is because I'm in a story, a real story. So we're not just talking about Christian holidays, Ben, you know, Easter, Good Friday, Christmas. Those are religious holidays. Those are actual days in history. And they're as historical as D-Day, or the day that John F. Kennedy was assassinated, or the day that we landed human beings on the moon. These are real days. And on a real day, in a real place, at a real moment, the tomb was empty, death was defeated, and Jesus was alive. That really happened. And there's nothing ever going to happen on planet Earth to eclipse it. And if that is in my story, and it is in my story, I'm related to that and connected to that. In fact, so much so that the scripture says, when he rose, I rose with him. And so there's hope, because at the end of the day, Jesus is going to be alive. He's going to be sitting on a throne. There's going to be a new heaven. There's going to be a new earth. There's going to be no more tears, no more death, no more sickness, no more sorrow. This picture is the future. And I'm in that future. I don't know if everybody can confidently say today, I know for sure I'm in that future, but I know I can. All because of grace, I'm in that future. And so I want to see some of that come to earth today. I want to be a part of loving and serving people today. But ultimately, I know how the story ends. And it is a beautiful, hopeful, glorious, redeeming ending. So that doesn't mean that I'm going to opt out and say, Lord, I just want you to come today. No, there's work to be done here so that we can do what Jesus prayed. We can see on earth what we know is true in heaven. And all of us can be an agent of that. To use your term, we can all be a community maker and a community changer today. But we're changing it how and why? Because we see the picture of the eternal community, and we know that we're going to be a part of that.
Julio Giglio, thank you so much for joining Hope Still Wins. Really appreciate your time. Again, the book is Don't Give the Enemy a Seat at Your Table. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much. Looking forward to seeing you again soon.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, listen up. Please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. There's a lot of people out there that I hope listen to this, and it means so much to our team, and it means so much for everybody involved. If you go out, take the time, click the 5 stars if you like it. I don't want to tell you to do something you don't like, but I think you like it. And also review it. It just is encouraging, but it also helps us in so many ways. As a reminder, our question from this episode is, what is a practice you use to recenter your mind when you feel fear, worry, insecurity, or anxiety creeping in? I think this is a great parallel to the question of last week. So this one is specifically when you start to feel those emotions or start to feel those things that aren't healthy, that bring you down. What do you do to recenter yourself? The team and I would love to hear your answers. We invite you to join us on Instagram to share your thoughts and continue the conversation. And we'll be choosing a few of your responses to share in a later episode. Well, that's it. That's it for today, my friends. I'll miss you, but we'll talk to you next week. We're going to be here with another episode of Hope Still Wins. Thank you again for tuning in to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and we'll talk to you soon.